Welcome to the podcast Benzo Tired. I'm your host, Neftel Benesty, and I'm Dutch. Join me on my journey into the world of benzodiazepines, withdrawal, bind, and more. Disclaimer, always consult your physician for medical advice. This is episode 27, Angie Peacock, and today it's August 7th, 2023. Angie Peacock was prescribed benzodiazepines and other psych meds after suffering from PTSD for many years. Angie tapered her benzodiazepine, the last of all her meds, and suffered severe withdrawal. She was featured on the documentary film Medicating Normal. During her journey, she has become an advocate for the drug harm community and currently offers her services for people coming off and recovering from benzos and other psych meds. Hi, Angie. Welcome to Benzo Tired. Could you share with the audience about your benzo journey?
Well, my benzo journey started about in 2003. I was actually stationed in Germany at the time. I was in the United States military. I went to Baghdad, Iraq at the very beginning of the war. And I had lots of trauma back to back. Not only was it like a very dangerous area that we were, you know, we'd hear small arms fire all day long, driving through dangerous neighborhoods, risk of death in, day in and day out. But also I had some kind of illness, which I now accredit it to taking anti-malarial drugs, heavy antibiotics, and it just gave me mental health consequences. So I started getting panic attacks and anxiety and agoraphobia, like while I'm in a war zone. So then I lost a lot of weight. I was shipped back to Germany and very quickly diagnosed with post-traumatic stress, given a benzo immediately. It wasn't really like, you know, you can go talk to someone or this is normal for where you've been. Nothing like that. It was very quickly. I started getting worse very quickly. And now looking back on that all these years later, I think I just wonder like how much of that was an adverse reaction or how much of that was tolerance very quickly.
What benzo did they prescribe you initially?
The original was clonazepam.
Whoa. Yep.
So then it was Paxil, and then it was Lexapro, and then it was Celexa, and then it was Effexor, and it was just, I kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse. Looking back, I'm just very suspicious, like, it was probably the benzo to start with. You know, you don't give, it's in the research now, don't give people with trauma, especially if it's new, don't give them benzos right away. So that's kind of what happened to me. So then it became 13 years on and off benzos. I never knew benzo withdrawal was a thing. I never knew you could have withdrawal from it. I never knew like possibly the anxiety that I was experiencing was actually like some benzo symptom that I was trying to treat with an SSRI. So basically I was on a merry-go-round of drugs for 13 years, on and off benzos. I've been on all of them. Xanax, Valium at a time, you know, Lyrica, Gabapentin, you name it. All of them. Wow. On and off for 13 years.
Wow. So what happens after 13 years?
So basically what happens is, well, actually probably like 3 years into the 13, I start feeling like this is not right. Like, why am I so sick? Why do I feel so bad? If I'm on all these meds, I should be feeling great. This doesn't make sense. So, right? Yeah. So there was a little bit of clarity in there. So I found a doctor and he said, who put you on all these meds? And I was like, you guys did, you know? And he's like, well, if I can get you a bed in a psych ward, can I take you off a bunch of them? And I was like, sure. So against my better judgment, he took me off like 10 overnight, cold turkey, in a psych ward. It was not a good experience. I ended up being in the hospital that time for like 45 days. They put me in like a treatment program, like addiction, but it wasn't addiction, you know, but it kept me safe at least. Mm-hmm. I experienced pretty bad withdrawal, but not too bad. And I just thought like, I don't think I understood it as withdrawal. It was just like, I'm going to feel like crap for a while because I'm getting off all these meds, you know? Mm-hmm. So then it took me the next 10 years to finally get off of everything. And it would be like, I would taper, you know, Seroquel and they would put me on Zoloft, and then I would taper the Zoloft and they put me on Cymbalta. And then it was like, okay, I don't want to take Cymbalta anymore. So then I would taper that. And it just, I think there was just something inside of me that kept saying like, just keep going, try to get on less. I did not have a plan in my mind that I was going to be off everything. That was not there. I really thought I needed the meds. I thought they saved my life. I thought I can't get through school without them. I was only going to school part-time. And basically what happened was benzos were last. I had tapered SSRIs before that. Before that, I had tapered antipsychotics. So benzos was last. And I was tapering my Ativan at the time pretty slowly, I thought. but I had a starting dose of 3 milligrams and I was going down by 0.25 every 6 weeks or so.
Right.
And then when I got to 1.25, all hell broke loose.
Right.
My first go ahead.
So what symptoms did you experience then?
So what happened was I was working out at a gym at the time, and every time I would do a squat, I would feel like this weird pain in my right hip at the top of like my sciatic nerve. And I was like, what is that pain? It feels so weird. I don't understand what that is, you know? And then I started feeling like a little dizzy. Then I started getting like a little anxious in the morning. It came on very slowly. And then by September of 2015, I mean, I was in excruciating pain. My whole right leg felt like it was on fire. So I thought, naturally, I have a back problem. Like, go to the doctor. So I go to the back doctor. He scans everything. He says, I'll never forget. He said, I see your MRI, but the pain that you're experiencing is not explained by what I see on the scans. And I was like, okay, well, I can't walk. Like, I couldn't sit on a toilet. I couldn't take a bath. Any little movement in my spine, it was like excruciating pain. So then what do you think happened? I was given prednisone, prednisone is a, what do they call it? A steroid.
Yeah. But so no one, including yourself, was, you know, linking this to the Ativan withdrawal.
No idea. I went to my psychiatrist. I told him it just started to spiral. So like between September, October, November, and December, I just went down a hole. I was having like shock-like sensations. I was having these jerks at night that my whole arms and legs would just stick out like a snowman, you know, like a snow angel or whatever. My heart was racing. I was getting vertigo. Intrusive thoughts started. Then it was suicidal thoughts. Then it was suicidal urges. Like it just ramped up very quickly. My psychiatrist said, you have agitated depression, which is code word for akathisia, as we all know. He tried to get me lithium. He tried to put me in the hospital, all this kind of stuff. And I was like, I was telling my friends, something is wrong with me. I don't know what it is, but something is wrong. I am losing my mind and I don't know what it is. And at the time I was in college, I was a statistics tutor, very smart, 4.0 GPA. And I'm sitting there doing my final exam in December, like staring at my paper. Like, I don't understand what it's asking me. Like, I just could not even think. It was like a brick wall in my brain. And I did not know what was happening to me. I didn't know it was the drug. I didn't know benzos was a thing. Honestly, when I took it, I felt like I was taking a Tic Tac or a piece of candy. It didn't do anything for me. I didn't get euphoria. I didn't run out early. I wasn't addicted to it. Nothing like this.
Mm-hmm.
So basically I had a friend visiting from Hong Kong in January and I was like, okay, I just got to get through Christmas. I just got to get through New Year's. Okay. I just got to get until Patricia comes. And she came, I felt like hell. She looked at me and was like, something is wrong with you. I'm like, yeah, I know, you know, she left town. And the very next day I just put myself in the hospital and I said, I'm on this anti-anxiety drug and I have the worst anxiety I've ever felt in my entire life. You got to get me off of this crap. And then I was cold turkeyed. And five days later, the gates of hell opened up and swallowed me whole.
Wow. And still no clue that it was the benzos causing all of this. So you're in amidst, you know, cold turkey hell. What happens next?
Basically, I had asked the doctor, you know, does this drug have a withdrawal? And he said, in the hospital, he said, you might hear voices and they might say your name.
What?
So, yeah, that's all he told me. So I'm sitting in the hospital, like, listening to myself, like, do I hear voices? Are they saying my name? Like, for 4 days. Like, literally, that's what happened. I was terrified, you know? And then, so then on day 5, he said, you staying in the hospital any longer is counterproductive. We're going to discharge you. You'll be fine. And I remember feeling like, haha, they thought I was addicted. I'll be fine. I was cautiously optimistic, you know? I left the hospital. I had to drive home an hour and a half. I stopped and got a cup of coffee. That's how confident I was. And the next 2 days everything just came on. Like you wouldn't believe. I started feeling like jerks in my legs. I was like hypersensitive to sound, light, taste. I lost my appetite. I couldn't stand up to walk to the bathroom. My blood pressure was erratic. I mean, it was hell. Then I started getting the akathisia feeling, like just this overwhelming amount of energy inside of my body that was so, it felt like a marshmallow man, like it could just push out and explode my skin or something. I felt like I could run marathons and not be tired. I had intrusive thoughts, suicidal, the other kind. I won't even say the word. It was bad, really bad. And I was terrified of taking a drug. I knew if I tell the psychiatrist what I'm experiencing, they're going to put me back in the psych ward. They're going to put me back on meds. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I just started researching like feverishly. I was Googling everything, benzo withdrawal, and I was like, oh my God, this is what I have. I finally figured it out. I found benzo buddies. That's how I figured this out.
So, well, obviously your world comes crashing down on you when you find that shit out. So, but at that point, you've already cold turkeyed. So, possibly you could have reinstated something, but how did your journey move from that point?
I mean, maybe I could have reinstated. I know that's controversial to say. I'm glad I didn't, but I felt like so fragile that I was like, if you put one drug on top of this, I'm gone. Like, I can't even take the chance. Like, it's that bad. There's no way. So I it was a lot of uncertainty. I thought like, am I going to heal from this? Am I going to die from this? I'm not really sure, but I'm just going to see if I can get through the next hour. Like, it was very, I had to live in the present moment, like 1 second at a time. And I would just lay there and count my heartbeats and just like, don't, I am healing. I am healing. I'd repeated that millions and millions and millions of times. Just hold on, hold on, hold on, So basically the next year was hell on wheels. The first 6 months was definitely the worst, but the first year was absolute. I still can't even believe I made it through that. You know what I mean? Like it was just so bad. But things like got like maybe 10% less in year two. And then it was like 15% less in year three. And then just slowly, 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 I didn't have windows. I didn't have like it. The closest thing to a window I have is I would feel like a little bit of break in the adrenaline for maybe like 10 minutes, like maybe 10% less of the adrenaline. And it would be like, oh my God, take a deep breath because you're about to get dunked back under the water. I had all kinds of symptoms that I didn't even read about. I had weird like sensations in my body that was like I had some other body inside of my body and it would like disconnect itself and then come back in. Like dropping sensations, I mean tingling and electrical, all kinds of stuff. I can't even stuff you can't even put into words. It was hell. But I slowly, slowly just tried to hang on. I read success stories. I tried to shield myself from anything negative because I didn't even want to read about akathisia. I was like, I don't even want to know. I know enough. Block it. Block the word from your Facebook filter. Like, I cannot even read about it. And then in month 10, the team from Medicating Normal found me. That's a film about people that are coming off of psychiatric drugs and how hellish it can be. So what happened was they called me on the phone. They said, we'd like to interview you for this film. And I was like, no. Because I had already been in four documentaries before that and commercials and all kinds of stuff because I'm a speaker for some Warrior Foundation, Wounded Warrior stuff. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. Because I thought, like, I don't even know if I'm going to live. Like, I'm not going to let you record this, So one of the filmmakers flew out from New York City and she took me for a walk and I could barely walk. And I was like, okay, I got to go back to the car now. And she's like, Angie, we need you to tell the story. If you don't, who will? And I was like, oh gosh. So she kind of talked me into it. And when I dropped her off at her hotel room and I closed the door, I thought to myself, maybe this is going to help me stay alive a little bit. I can't be in a documentary and then like kill myself because then they're going to say, oh, Angie was such a nice person, but she died by suicide. Like, I can't let that happen, So the next 3 years, they followed me. They come back every maybe 2 to 6 months. It just depended. They'd film little segments, me on the couch, me trying to work out, me trying to go to school, me trying to cook myself a meal. Like, it was, and you know how that goes. They shoot tons of footage and only like 20 minutes gets in the actual film. But so that's kind of how it unfolded.
Well, I personally want to thank you for being on Medicating Normal because that's the first time that I actually saw you. And I think it was one of the first documentaries. No, I'm sure it was the first documentary that I saw, and you were the first human being that I saw in a documentary. I was like, that's me. That's what we go through. This is real. That was the first time like a real benzo story came across to me. So thank you for that. How was it like for you too? Because you did participate, obviously. And how was that like for you?
It was so hard. Even like, I remember the first a couple times they came, like I could barely talk. You know what I mean? And like, you want me to talk about what I'm experiencing or tell you how this happened? You know, and there's lights around and there's cameras in your face and you're mic'd with a microphone and you're, these people are strangers and I don't know if they understand me correctly because do I sound crazy? Are they going to call 911 on me? Like, I had all kinds of thoughts and just the ability to do it, you know, walk up and down the street and they're filming you and then they say, turn around and walk again and turn around and walk again. That's how documentaries are filmed, you know, like we're going to the grocery store, let's follow you. And I'm like, I can't even walk in a grocery store. What do you mean? You
right,
know, it was
right.
like pushing me to my limit for sure. But I really did enjoy, like I became really close friends with the filmmakers and one of them in particular, she would call me periodically, maybe once a week, or she'd check in on me and say, like, we just interviewed Bob Whitaker, we just interviewed Peter Gurcha, and don't worry, they said you're gonna get better, just hang in there. And I mean, I can't tell you, that was like so life-giving. These were people that I was listening to on YouTube while I was in the bathtub, you know, just trying to stay alive. And I was like, oh my God, thank you so much for telling, you know, there, these people know about my case and they know about me and they're telling me I'm gonna get better. So I gotta hang on, gotta hang on. But yeah, I never really knew, like, how's the film gonna turn out? How's it gonna be received? You're just going on blind faith. Like, I just wanna share my story and tell people this is real.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of have to let go of what they're gonna do with the footage.
Yeah, well, I think you did a great job. And we see you being very vulnerable and very real and just very relatable. And I think that for me personally, it was very important to get that validation of seeing someone go through what I was going through.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can touch on like one take that they did with you, which is just, you know, embedded in my memory forever, when you cry and you were like, it was the fucking drugs. It wasn't me. It was the fucking drugs. And that is kind of like how I felt too. You know, this isn't really me. I'm not a suicidal, maniac, whatever. It's the fucking drugs that are doing this to me. So that was very, just very relatable. And thank you so much for that. So they record, you know, Medicating Normal with you. You're somewhere around month 10. How does your healing go, you know, during and after Medicating Normal?
Yeah. So they followed me maybe 3 years. So I was about 3 years off when they were finished. And I was actually still somehow by miraculously or by desperation to stay in reality, I stayed in school the entire withdrawal experience. At the beginning, I was only taking one class and it was with professors that knew me beforehand. And I explained to them what was happening. And like, even if I get an F, can I just sit in your class? Because I need to be in reality. I don't have anyone that's helping me stay here, you know?
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I got through it with the school stuff, but by the time they were finished with the film, I was in grad school. And how I got through that, I still don't know either, but I was like, please don't release the film until I'm out of here, please. Because I'm going to get in trouble.
Right.
Because if you think of I also have a YouTube channel. Okay. And I couldn't say certain things on YouTube, like suicidal thoughts, for instance, because I'm in school at the time and they're going to kick me out of school if they find this out, you know?
Right.
So I was like, please, please don't release the film until I'm out of school. Just give me like 3 more months. And, school is very much like a double agent kind of situation. I'm sitting there as this person who's suffering withdrawal, who's completely dismantling all the brainwashing I had about, you know, I'm mentally ill and I need to be on meds for the rest of my life. And, you know, mental illness is lifelong chronic condition, all these things that I had been told and I'm learning in school. And I'm sitting there like I'm in a film that's like dismantling all of this. It was a strange duality.
Mm-hmm,
but,
mm-hmm.
So basically, so what was your question? I'm sorry.
About your healing, like
the healing. Oh, okay. Yeah. So I guess the film came out, I think when I was around 4 years off, and I jumped in a van and I asked the filmmakers, hey, can I travel with the film and do some in-person screenings? And they said, yes, but they have to be private screenings because right now the distribution is such that we can't be public and we can't sell tickets and all these kind of things. So basically what I did was I found contacts in all these different cities in the United States. And I basically made like a little map with little pins and I just played connect the dots. And I did a tour of in-person screenings with Medicating Normal, showing its communities. We'd have like a community-wide conversation about mental health and what does it mean to ask for help? What's informed consent? What can these drugs do? What can they not do? It was pretty fascinating. It was, I was so impacted by how many people this has touched in like real life. You know what I mean? It wasn't like a Facebook comment that you read. It wasn't a YouTube video that you see. It was like, these are real people who have been devastated by these medications, and they would stay after, they would hug me, they would cry, they would tell me their stories, they would stand up and tell me their story. It was very moving. I wanted to have a video camera there to capture some of what was happening, but it was like, no, this is too sacred. Like, this is too private and too personal. Just let these people feel what they need to feel. So long story short, that van life experience, being in an RV, not quite healed, like bumping my way through the United States, like totally brain dead sometimes, days where I couldn't even pump my own gas or get groceries, like totally out of my mind. I'm just like driving along, like, let's go to El Paso, Texas and do a screening. Like, I'm like, I don't know what the hell I'm thinking here, but whatever. So I think it really helped my healing. It gave me an avenue to like channel some of the anger I was feeling. Just the kindness of strangers, the people that I met, having lunch or coffee with people, it really helped me. I think it helped me.
I think that's such a special way of being into this healing process because most of us, I'll speak for myself, I'm mostly housebound. I mean, I could get out, but I just don't. For most of my withdrawal tape or whatnot. But you're actually going out and about, and you live in a van, so that kind of helps. You have a house on wheels, so that is just amazing. Getting the distraction, the coffees, such
It's like
a
exposure therapy. It's exposure therapy 24/7. But then it was great because I was like, okay, I gotta go take a nap. And I would come in here and lay down like immediately, you know? Like, don't talk to me, don't look at me. I'd put the blanket over my head, and then it's like, okay, I don't know how I'm gonna do this next screening. And I just kept doing it. It was amazing.
So, how would you say that you are now in terms of the recovery of the psych harm?
I think I feel pretty good. I would say I'm like 80% healed. I don't want that to scare people. Remember, I was on total more than 40 drugs in a 13-year period. I think it was like 30 something of those were psych drugs. On and off, kindled, cold turkeyed, you name it. Like, I'm a walking poster child for like the wrong way to taper anything. So I did taper a couple drugs correctly, but all that to say is, like, I'm a pretty extreme case. I was very severe. So the fact that even I healed means people listening are going to heal well before I ever did, you know? But I just feel like I still have some visual challenges, like depth perception, things in slow motion, which I don't know, is this part of brain injuries that I had? Is this benzos? I don't know. I'll never know. I'm just hanging on. But I continue to improve. I mean, even just driving around the country, I'm at 10,000 feet right now above sea level, and I could not have done this a year ago. There's no way. And I'm totally fine. I've been here a week. I'm totally fine. So it's been a slow, long crawl out of hell. Let's put it like that, you
Can you
know?
remember the last when the, when you took your last dose? Do you remember when that was?
Yeah. January 4th, 2016.
That's a while ago now. So
Seven and a half.
when did you decide, to use that lived experience to become a benzo coach?
Oh, great question. So basically, I ran with the film for like 3 years, doing screenings, talking about these issues. And I would always get emails and messages on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube and all these people, you know, Angela, you give me hope. Can you talk to me for a minute? Can you write me a message? Like, can I ask you about your symptoms? These kind of things. And it was just so time consuming that I was like, man, these people need help like bad. You know, and I had done some other advocacy, like at the legislative level. I'd gone to DC. I've tried to rewrite laws. I tried to help in certain states. And I was like, where is the best use of my experience and my education? Where could I use that? And it was really a choice. It was, I could get licensed as a therapist. I could move back to my home state. I could move basically anywhere in the United States and become a therapist. And I was like, I don't want to do that. Like, I don't believe in this medical model. There's things I have problems with in the licensure process. I was like, no. What if I became a coach and just help these people full time? So I thought, and I just really enjoy, I just, this experience has brought me, like, I love people now. I did not used to. Now I like love people, and I feel so much empathy for them, and I know how bad it can get. And I was a severe case, so it's like, in a way, I'm not happy about what happened to me, but in a way, because of my experience, I am able to help the more extreme cases that don't get help, that get kicked out of all the groups, that doctors won't touch. So I'm like, let me just do this and let's just see how it let's see if I'm good at this or if I can even do this. I wasn't sure, but I became a coach and I have been packed full since a year and a half now. Packed full. Like I have people
Wow.
messaging me from Finland this morning asking, can I move them up? And I'm like, I don't even have a cancellation to move you up. You know,
Right.
it's so overwhelming how much help people need.
So you have an international clientele.
Yep, all over the world. Croatia, Slovakia, I have Poland, Finland, Norway, Sweden,
Wow.
South Africa, Israel, you name it.
Wow.
Oh,
Yeah,
yeah.
I there is such a need for people with the lived experience to do what you do.
Yep.
I know that there are some out there, but in my opinion, not nearly enough,
There's
because
not,
so many
yeah.
people are harmed by this. So in your practice, as you will, what are the common denominators, the problems that you're seeing with the patients?
Ooh, good question. I see, usually it follows the same story. I had a life stress, or I had a bad job, or a bad relationship, or I was away from, you know, home for school, or something like that. They get put on the antidepressant or a benzo. They don't feel well. They might have new symptoms. Then they get put on another medication, and then another, and another, and another. And usually it's a polypharmacy situation. It's very rare I see people that have only been on one drug for like long term. But at some point, either they want to have children, or their doctor dies or retires, or perhaps they start exhibiting symptoms and they're not sure what's going on. And they go to their doctor and they say, hey, I think I don't want to take this medicine anymore. Can you help me come off? The doctor usually obliges and they're off in 2 weeks. And then they find out, wait, you cannot get off this drug in 2 weeks. There's no way. So
Right.
then they will start Googling. They will find our support groups. They find Medicating Normal. They find my YouTube channel, whatever. They find some of the organizations and they're like, oh my God, what just happened to my life? You know, and
Right.
they have to figure out how to get off the drug. Some of them use doctors that are helpful, but I would say maybe less than 5% have doctors that actually understand this and can help them intelligently. The rest of them, they figure out a way to taper. It's pretty brutal. It's painful. Then they go through the withdrawal process. They're off. And then inevitably, some of them will come back to me, or people in Protracted will say, like, Angie, I need help. I don't know who I am anymore. How do I rebuild my life? I don't even know what I like. I don't even know who what to do next. Like, I just need help navigating this. And I feel those are my favorite, I guess, people to work with, because that's the closest thing to me that I've had to do the same thing.
Right.
Like, I convinced myself I was a mental patient and I was mentally ill for all these years and just completely wrapped in my diagnosis and I believed all of it. Hook, line, and sinker, you know?
Right. Look, I'm not po really polydrugged. I mean, they gave me all sorts of drugs like Seroquel to try and Remeron, blah, blah, blah. I didn't like any of them. So I can really say my single problem was the benzo, and it was
Yeah.
or is the hardest fucking thing in the world.
Yes.
But this protracted stuff that you're talking about, I think that's very a real and interesting topic, because as far as what I've seen in the community, there's like help for when you're doing a taper. But I don't see a lot of people, maybe it's out there, but I don't see a lot of people talking about the trauma that is, withdrawal, and then after,
Yes.
what to do then. So I think you are touching on a very big need there. So audience, if you're listening and you are in protracted, please book a session with Angie, because she's an expert on this. And another question that I have for you is, because you have literally tapered and been on everything almost, in your experience, is there like a real difference between, for example, a Seroquel to taper, or a benzo, or an SSRI?
Oh, I'll tell you, I have two tapering support groups and they're on all different drugs. There's some people on antipsychotics, there's some people only on a benzo, there's some people on antidepressants, and I'm telling you, their symptoms are so similar. You can hardly tell one drug from the next. I would say benzos definitely have a little bit more akathisia associated with it, especially in a cold turkey situation. But that's not to say SSRIs can't cause it too. Antipsychotics obviously cause it. But I would say more of the akathisia cases that I see are benzo related. But the symptoms are so similar. The way that you come off the drug is very similar. Usually it's 5 to 10% every 2 to 4 weeks, sometimes much slower. There's all different ways to taper each drug. Even people, you know, there's Facebook groups with lots of really good guidance. Surviving Antidepressants has guidance, Benzo Buddies has guidance, but that's really just meant to be guidance. You know, it's not something to be followed like, I have to do it. I have to make a cut every 2 weeks on the dot. You know, there's people that are holding. There's people, believe it or not, that are tapering more than one drug because they feel like they have to. They cannot survive like this, you know, tapering one drug at a time for the next 8 years. So mostly patients have figured out a hyperbolic taper is the safest way. And that's Mark Horowitz's research. Please Google him if you need to figure that out. Mark Horowitz hyperbolic taper. But that's what all the lay community has been doing for like 20, 30 years. They figured out you have to go very, very, very slowly. Your body cannot adapt when you go too fast.
Did you see the documentary that he was on in Britain?
BBC Panorama? Yes, I sure did.
What was your take on that documentary?
It just, I see, wait, because listen, remember, I've done 180 film screenings of Medicaid Normal worldwide, okay? So I have talked to all kinds of people and I hear all their comments, and there's always themes. Like every audience, there's like an archetype. There's the person that stands up and says, "My meds work for me. Don't you dare. This is dangerous." And then there's another archetype that says, "You're telling my story and you keep going. You're so inspirational." And then the other one says, "Filmmakers, you did such an excellent job." You know, there's these themes. So the theme I saw with BBC Panorama was, we're going to tell you how dangerous these drugs are, and then at the last minute we're going to be like, oh, very apologetic, and be like, but they work for some people. And it's like, do you think we're stupid? Like, we just watched this whole movie about this woman who had sexual dysfunction for 30 years, and you're going to tell me but it's okay to take an antidepressant? I don't think so. I'm not that stupid, you know. So I just saw it as back talk. You know, I felt bad because I feel like Adele, Mark Horowitz, Joanna Moncrief, David Healy, you know, all these big researchers and people that believe us, and then to like go against them at the end, it just hurt me a little, you know.
I mean, it kind of went like viral in my little benzo bubble. Like, oh, you have to see this documentary, you know. Oh, you know, and I did see it, and I guess I felt the way like most people would feel in my community. Like, oh, they're telling it's so bad for everyone, and look what it can do. It like totally destroys lives. But in the end, it's like it does help for some people. But at least it's something. At least it's
It is something.
something. It is
It
something.
is something. And remember, I've been in this community 7.5 years. So I've watched the growth, like what is happening, what is actually making impact, what is helpful for our community, what's not helpful, like what are the things that are just the resources and the organizations that have grown and all the grassroots things that have come out and all the films and the commercials and, you know, akathisia posters hanging in Scotland. You know, I've watched all these things progress. So I don't see it as every time one of these news stories comes out, it's kind of like the media is so fast. You know, people get it for a couple seconds, they think it's cool, and then on to the next news cycle, which depresses me. But I could say overall, we are growing in awareness. People are figuring this out. People are getting off their meds. People are finding safer ways to come off. The medical industry is just still way behind, you know, but people are figuring it out.
I think what is frustrating to me from a personal point of view is that in my opinion, in my experience, is that all this the psych psychiatrists that I've seen and I that treated me and all the doctors, most of them didn't believe me. I would say 99% didn't believe me. But also that same 99%, if I like presented them the Ashton manual, they were not open to that at all. So I think there really needs to be a cultural change within the medical community that they need to be open to other researches and their patient. They have to like brush their egos aside and be open to change. But I understand that it may be super scary for them, but I think and my hope is because we've got social media now and the internet and podcasts and YouTube channels, we've got so much right now. There's so many ways for us to convey, you know, our story and our concerns. So I do hope that it gets picked up more and just less prescribing of all these bullshit drugs, I hope.
I know, I know. It bothers me because I think like you can't tell me that these doctors don't know. Because if you have even just you and I, Naftal, and all the people that we know, you go to your doctor, you try to tell him, "I'm having a really hard time coming off this drug, I'm having withdrawal symptoms." You can't tell me the thousands of us that have been harmed and all the doctors that we have tried to tell that they just continue to act like it doesn't exist. I don't believe that. I just don't.
Yeah, I was just shocked with my doctors telling me you're such a rare case. We've never seen anyone just as sick as you or having seizures or you're taking an awful long time to get off these drugs, you know, these weird, shitty things. It's interesting. I really do hope that more people get more vocal. I mean, I also understand. But this is my point of view, and I'm not really sure what your thoughts are on this. But people like you or me, we're very vo vocal, and we want to change things. And but not everyone is like that. Not that I blame them for it, but some people are just in such a bad place, or they just want to move on once they get better. So I think, you know, also has to do with the people that are vocal about it and really try to make that difference, like you. So I really want to thank you for that so much. Again, you
Thank
really
you.
inspired me with Medicating Normal. I was like, oh, this is. I understand. This is it, you know. Like I understand her.
It's the
This is
thing.
definitely, yeah. So you really did touch my life. So what I always ask my guests at the end of a show would be, if people are listening and they're in benzo withdrawal, what would you recommend them?
Ooh, good question. There's lots of answers there. I would say find support. That's so important. That could be a healing buddy through benzo buddies or surviving antidepressants or one of the Facebook groups. Find somebody that is similar to you in age or in drug that you're tapering or personality or someone that you can help day to day and like talk to each other on a daily day to day basis. You cannot get through this by yourself. You need some kind of support. I would say next, don't push too hard on your family and your support system to say, like, you have to believe me, read this article, watch these videos. I feel like sometimes when you push really hard because you just want that validation, it can actually push them a little farther away from you. So just be careful with, how much information you share or how you go about it, because I just see it. It almost feels worse, like when you're trying to convince your therapist and then they're like, no, this is not a thing. And then it's like, oh, now I have more trauma, so I just prevent some of that trauma. Next, keep your eyes focused on hope. There's lots of success stories out there. There's lots of YouTube channels. I have a YouTube channel, tons of stuff with lots of hope. Keep your eyes focused on hope. The reality of the situation is your brain is going to lie to you this whole process. It's going to say it's permanent. You're never going to get better. I'm one of those rare cases. I'm going to get akathisia, whatever. It's going to say all these things that 99% of won't even happen. So just keep your eyes focused. This is temporary. I will get through this. I have to do my taper as best as I can. If I'm in a cold turkey situation, you will heal too. I'm proof of it. I'm sitting here talking to you. I am proof too. So just hang in there. Get through this time. You really just got to stitch the days together, get the time behind you, and just survive it. At the very least, just survive. That's all you got to do.
Yeah, definitely. So where can people find you?
I'm on all the platforms. Just look up Angie Peacock. I should be at the top. YouTube is Angie Peacock. I put out videos about twice a week. Medicating Normal, you can watch it on their website, medicatingnormal.com, or you can come to my website, angiepeacock.com. I have tapering support groups, withdrawal support groups, protracted groups. You can book an individual session. There's all kinds of stuff. And everything I do on YouTube is free. Everything on Facebook and Instagram is free. So just hang on, hold on to hope, and I'll see you on the other side of this when you heal,
Yeah.
It's just a matter of time.
Thank you so much for your time, Angie, and we'll be in touch.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the episode. Be well, be safe. Remember, it's not a race, and don't forget to subscribe and rate the show.